Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. I think we're going to have a really packed information show today. We have Chris back with us, and I want to, before we get on with Chris and we start talking about strategies for overcoming negative symptoms of ADHD, I just want to remind everyone who lives in the Los Angeles area that I have two adult support groups that I run for CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD. The first group is located in Torrance. That group has been going on for close to 5.5 years now. It's located at 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. It's held at the Center for Learning Unlimited, and that's a school for children with ADHD and on the autistic spectrum. And they were kind enough to donate that space to us for free. So it's Wednesday nights from 7:30 to 9. We have a lot of growth going on in that group, so I'd really appreciate anybody in the area to come over and join us. The second group is held in Culver City, and that address is 6666 Green Valley Circle. And that is in a building called the Share Building. It's really a building for 12-step programs, and so we've got all different kinds of people that are around us while we're having that meeting, really positive energy. So for those of you in the Culver City area, that's Thursday nights from 6 to 7:30. So now, without further ado, I want to bring Chris on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Justine.
How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. And how are you?
I'm good. So I think this is going to be a fun show. A lot of information, too, because there's a lot of people out there who really struggle daily with the executive function deficits or negative symptoms of ADHD. And we want to talk about different things that we do, Chris and I do, to help us every day to overcome some of these things. Correct?
Right.
Okay. So I guess we want to start with listing either we call them executive function deficits or the negative symptoms. So let me just list them this way first. Impulsivity, difficulty focusing, forgetful, we lose things, we procrastinate, we have a problem with emotional regulation, we get scattered, we're unorganized, we have short-term memory issues, and we have a big difficulty understanding the concept of time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Laugh, because just before the show began, Chris is here, and my husband was here, and we were just talking about something, and Chris looked at the clock and said, oh, it's 4 o'clock. And we were laughing because we probably would have talked through half the show without realizing that it had already begun. So if you want to talk about executive function deficits and how other people speak of them, I guess we could go through that as well. So you want to take that one on?
Sure. Well, I want to kind of step back for a second and go hit on a point that I think is really important, which is so we have a list that we're working off of, and it's the things that it's those negative symptoms, but so much of what I brought to the table are things that I learned before I met you. So these are things that I developed over the course of time and whatnot, and that something that you hit on time and time again, which is probably the most important strategy for overcoming the negative symptoms, is the work that you talk about all the time, is the internal work.
Right.
So I don't want to say in any way, shape, or form that these made my life better, because they didn't. I was doing these things when I met Justine, and it was difficult. You know, it was hard, and it was it took care of some things, but as you well know, it didn't help me in so many ways. So
it never helped me either. I used to go to Staples and buy out the store for organizational items, and I never used them.
Just like we were talking a little bit about our living conditions, we, if given to our own device, we live in very austere environments. I, at some point in the near future, will take some photographs that I've taken and upload them somehow onto Justine's page, Miss ADD site. But you look at where I live, and things are, it's decorated, it's nice, but you're not going to see a lot of stuff out. And it's not that I have closets full of stuff, because it's the same thing. You open my closet up and, oh my gosh, there's nothing in there. I'm trying to minimize down to those essential items.
So I just thought of a good way to do this. I probably should have thought of it before the show started, but I think this would be great. But, I mean, we have so much fun because we have ADD.
That's what it's about.
What if we talk about impulsivity, procrastination? You kind of give what you do.
Okay.
Okay. And then I go back to what I'm famous for, and that's how the mindfulness and meditation kind of helps with that as well.
That's a good idea.
So, yeah, this way we add both in.
Okay. So.
So why don't we start? Why don't we start in with a list of things? And for those of you who are listening live and you want to call in, let me just remind you that the number to call in is 917-889-7025, and Chris and I would love to hear from you.
And just before we get started, there's just one thing I wanted to hit real quick, and it's the strategy basics. Four quick points. The first one's be creative. We have ADHD, and Justine all the time talks about it being a positive thing if you want it to be. In my case, I definitely wholly embrace that. And because of that, it's okay to think outside the lines and then to harness that creative ability. The second point is be resourceful. Use whatever you have around you. We, you know, resources are limited, so you'll see some of my strategies are very rudimentary, 3x5 cards and things like that, but it's how they're being used that really matters. And also, if you have ADHD friends, tap into them. They're
the
another
best.
Resource.
Yeah.
The third point is be persistent. At first you don't succeed, try again and again. And eventually, you know, under multiple layers of failure, success will be found. And once it is, the payoff is huge, knowing that you have accomplished that. And then the final point is being flexible. Things change, environments change, people change, and just try and stay flexible to those cues. And when they do change, sometimes our strategies have to change with them. So I just wanted to throw that out.
No, that's great. No, that's, and I think that's really, really important. You know, the persistent piece of that is something that I think a lot of us kind of get tired pretty easily because we've tried something, it didn't work, and then we're not really shifting.
Right.
We're staying in the same place, and that can be kind of boring. See, a big thing for me with people with ADHD when I work with clients is the word boring. I get bored, especially
mm-hmm.
kids, very
oh, yeah.
easily. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a big trigger for people with ADHD. If it's boring.
Yeah, and the other part is being called stupid all the time. So obviously I can't overcome this problem because I'm stupid. No, just the contrary. I think it's not a matter of being stupid. There's a set of rules out there that maybe we don't understand, but that's why we've got to tailor our environment to our own needs.
Right.
That's why I live in an austere environment, because that's who I am, and I function better in that.
Right.
So being in that place is good.
And the other piece of this, too, is to be open. Being open to ideas. Because I run these two support groups, and I have a lot of people in these groups when I come up with ideas, whatever it's about, whether it's mindfulness or meditation or it's, you know, different things for clutter or procrastination, they kind of look and say, okay, well, I don't know. I tried that, but... When I hear the word but or can't is when I shut down, okay? Because, you know, when you say you can't do something, no. You can say I won't do that. But say you got to lose that word from your vocabulary, the word can't. Can it be difficult at times? Yes, it can. But the more persistent we are and the more we figure out different creative ways to do things, we have successes. And successes is what helps us catapult to the next step.
Something that just struck me is you said can't and won't. That word won't, I find can be liberating, can be empowering.
Mm-hmm.
When you say you can't, you're a victim.
Right.
When you say I won't,
right,
you're now making a decision. So that's a critical piece right there, I think you brought up.
Right, yeah. It really is, and I think people really need to change the way they talk, especially in our wonderful population. Okay, so we're going to start with impulsivity.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. So probably the one that I had the least amount of strategies for coping with impulsivity. So, because I am an impulsive individual, oh, my gosh. The biggest thing for that, and this is going to cover a couple of different points, and it was actually brought up last time I was on, is having goals. And not just big overarching life goals, but simple basic daily goals, because quite frankly and honestly, I do struggle with impulsivity still, because I'll come home, I'll feed my dog, and then the next thing I find myself doing is I'm supposed to be out in the backyard mowing because I've only got a half an hour light before it gets dark. I'm sitting inside doing something else. I look up and, oh, crap, it's dark. What I do is have a whiteboard in my house. So this is something else that is part of the strategy, but it's not the strategy itself. The whiteboard is a tool for a variety of things. It is probably one of the best things I ever did, and probably one of the hardest things I had to get my wife to kind of come on board with, because I wanted to mount it at the time in our house in Michigan. And she looked at me like I was on drugs, you know, a whiteboard really in the house. Having that visual cue. So what I do is that I know I come home, if I have things that I have to get done on a given day, and especially if I'm in a time zone, I will write them down, and it's in effectively my living room, the den. So I go in there and I'll see, oh crap, 4 o'clock, I gotta mow the lawn. So it's a kind of visual cue to look at it. So I'm not I'm hitting it and getting it done, as opposed to just impulsively walking off to some other task. I'm going to have to let that one sit a little bit longer.
The impulsivity. Okay,
yeah.
So for people who don't understand what impulsivity is, there's two types, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
There's that verbal impulsivity, where somebody says something and we just snap back at them, or we say something that we think is very funny, but it actually has hurt a number of people in the room. You know, that was my biggest issue growing up, was I was extremely impulsive and would say things that jumped into my mind because I didn't have a filter, as a lot of us don't, to filter out those things that could be hurtful or harmful to other people and to yourself. And then the other kind of I see impulsivity is in the danger zone, where we may ride a motorcycle without a helmet, or we may rock climb before we're ready to rock climb. You know, I know that's an extreme, but these are things that are very impulsive that we do. And I think part of this issue too is related to a lot of us. I wasn't one of these people, but I do know a lot of people with ADHD who like that on the edge kind of living, speeding in a car at, you know, 35 doing 60,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, going back to the impulsivity, my son and I definitely both exhibit these things, and I think you find this probably bigger in the age population than other, but you'll find this in the hospital emergency rooms oftentimes, because we've gone and done something without – so rock climbing – for example, you know, you've got to, it's building up to something. Whereas I recall an incident that occurred about 3 years ago. I get a phone call from my son who had just had an accident out in the woods. He was out hiking by himself, boulder hopping up a stream that we go up to all the time, and he fell and was injured, you know, pretty bad. But he just at spur of the moment wanted to do something because it seemed like it was really cool. You know, and to a 17-year-old,
yeah,
yeah, it is. until it goes bad, and then, oh, crap, I don't have anybody here. If, you know, a limb's broken, there's nobody here to help me out. And then all these things start crashing to the ground. So taking a moment to stop, to pause, to take a moment and think about what you're doing, which is so hard to do.
And that's where the mindfulness comes in.
Right.
Which I'm going to bring into every one of these things. So when we're aware of things that we're going to do, we take that moment, we hit the pause button,
mm-hmm.
as Dr. Daniel Siegel talks about, and we just start to think about the steps involved in what we're getting ready to do. For example, your son, if he had used his pause button that day, he would have thought, okay, I want to go on this hike, this is important to me, but let me just think about the positives versus the negatives, which is something I do with a lot of people. We make two lists,
mm-hmm.
kind of see which one outweighs the other. And then also using mindfulness and hitting that pause button before we react to somebody who has just said something or done something to us that could be very hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And mindfulness has helped me with is that. So I pause and think about, okay, what I'm getting ready to say, how would I feel if somebody said that to me? And if I don't feel very good about it, then I have to switch that up and say it a different way.
So kind of an offshoot to that, the pause button, but it's related. This is a mindfulness strategy for me, is that when I start getting stressed, if I don't know if we've talked about EFT, it's the short terms for it's tapping.
Okay.
And it's in.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember what the acronym stands for off the top of my head. I'll look it up first chance I get. But what the visual comes to mind, and it's something my therapist did introduce me to. It's actually something I also heard at church, oddly enough. The minister working with Vietnam vets, who use this a lot, do it. And I'm not going to get into the mechanics of it other than to say when you tap, you can do it with your finger. I tend to do it with a small stone. So when I start getting stressed, my visual, because I'm a visual person, is a stone, and that's kind of a trigger for me to remember, okay, I can, you know, I can either tap or not, but it's that way of taking that moment and stepping back out of the situation at hand, so I don't get consumed in it, so I don't, you know, go down the path of no return.
So the other thing that I tell people, especially in the world of triggers, because triggers are something that hit us, and it's related to our stuff from maybe years ago, is if somebody says something that is hitting a trigger, that we take the breath is really, really important. It's cleansing, and it's stops you from reacting very fast. You take a long, deep breath, and you ask that person a question,
mm-hmm.
which then takes down the emotions of the moment. So I'm sorry, but I really didn't understand exactly what you were saying to me. Can you say that again? And sometimes what happens is the other person then will present it in a different way, in a better way.
So I'm thinking about this, and this is probably one of the areas that I developed probably more later on, early. So, for example, going back 3 years, 4 years before diagnosis, being impulsive was just who I was. It was, and we've talked about this, time-wise, there were certain things I was not impulsive about. When it came to time, I was very cautious about time. I was always mindful about it because I knew, you know, being in the Army, you don't show up to a meeting with a colonel 10 minutes late. It just doesn't happen. It happens once, and that's it.
Done.
And you're done. I fear probably not the best strategy in that situation, but that was what, for me, helped me or enabled me to overcome the deficit piece, you know, that impulsive nature of, well, I got 5 more minutes. Let me, you know, just go shoot off to go do something else and, you know, blow an appointment or worse. So it's something that with mindfulness, as you touched upon, has gotten better. And I find that I still have a lot of work to do in this area, and I'm getting better at it. But it's probably going to be one of the most challenging areas to overcome. And again, going back to writing things down, even you go to work, and here's the dangerous part about lists. We've all, and it was one of the things that when I went to the first couple of meetings that you had in Torrance, I went, wow, these folks all write lists down too. Cool, I'm just like them. And then after a year, I went, crap, I'm just like them. I'm writing lists down that 90% of the garbage on the list doesn't amount to anything. So it's a matter of learning how to write down what's important. What are those things that are going to get me in trouble? And what are those things that if I forget will be uncomfortable? But and I found that in the past couple of months, I don't write things down that are like laundry. I don't, if I got to do it, I don't write it down. I have another coping strategy for it, but it doesn't make any of my lists anymore. So I've gotten away from lists, and the ones that I have don't get any longer than a page, and they endure a week. So I'll go over it for a week, and it'll change a little here and there, scratch this out, add a couple of things, but that's it.
Right.
And then next week I'll maybe have another one, both for work and at home, so it doesn't become overbearing.
Right. Okay. Moving on to difficulty focusing. So strategies, you're going to talk about strategies for difficulty with focusing.
Okay. So it depends on the issue. If it's a work issue, generally speaking, or something that I find extremely challenging, the probably the best thing for me is to pull myself out of noisy areas and listen to music that I happen to be a big fan of Rush. So the percussion in there, there's something about how my brain functions and listening to Neil Peart play that for whatever reason clicks. I will listen to that, and it just kind of enables, it's something in the background, and then I can stay focused a little bit better. I remember my son, when he was going through school, and especially in high school, would listen to music up in his room just ungodly loud in his headphones and just be thumping away on his homework, you know, and he's bringing home straight A's in math, and I'm like, oh, my God, I wish maybe if I'd have done that, I'd have...
Maybe me too.
I'd have done better in with mathematics, but it's that was probably one of the biggest things, or is one of the biggest things, because I still do that from time to time. Another thing is I'll just separate myself from the environment altogether. So if I'm at work, I'll go off someplace, take the work with me that I have to do. Again, seeking out quiet.
Right.
In just a different environment so that I can be there, be present with the work at hand and focus on it.
So the other thing is you and I are definitely in agreement about the environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to sit down to do something, a stark environment, so you can focus on that one thing
mm-hmm.
that you're doing
mm-hmm.
so that you don't have your computer running, so that you can go to YouTube or you can go to different sites, because I know a lot of people say that's difficult for them. If you have to use your computer to type, you know, you're in Word and you're typing or whatever, just being able to keep bringing yourself back to the moment.
I'm chuckling because I spent 3 days last week finishing out a set of meeting minutes that really shouldn't have taken me any more than a couple, 2-3 hours, but it was painful.
Was it boring?
It not only was it boring, but I would be in there and get caught up in something, and it would lead me to something else. So it was staying focused on the issue, because there so many things came out of that meeting that it created a problem. So, but I, in this case, I just could not grab my laptop, take it, and go. So
I just thought about something that this is my creative mindset. So you remember Peter Pan, and they talk about Never Never Land, right?
Right.
The place where nobody ever has to grow up.
Yikes.
So in this population, there's, and in general, the population, there's a lot of people who are not emotionally grown up and not emotionally individuated. So we like to go to Never Never Land when we've got things that we have to do in the adult world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, instead of staying focused on the project that we're working on, we are moving on to things that are very, dare I say, childlike, because they're entertaining, they're creative, which, hey, if somebody is a designer of video games, good for them, because that they get to enjoy that.
Yeah.
Or like my younger son, lucky him, he gets to compose all day long, you know, because that's what he's learning in school. But there are people out there who don't have, you know, the way to do something like that all the time.
Well, and that is a key piece. So when I was in the Army, I used to work on ships, and I loved what I did. I truly was, when I went to work, I looked forward to it. I was there all day. My mind was there. Were there things that came up during the day that I hated? Yeah, and I'd put them off till I absolutely had to get them done, but I would eventually do them. But being someplace that you want to be, doing something you want to do, is probably the single most important thing. Because later on, when I was doing things after I'd retired from the military and started working outside of that for other people, then I was doing things that I didn't necessarily enjoy as much. And I found, wow, I used to love what I did, and it was so easy because I loved what I did. And there are other people who, in the meetings that I've heard, how they describe how they hate their jobs and how painful it is. And I thought, wow, you know, it's got to be extremely difficult to be in that situation and have to fight your way through day by day what you're going to do. Where I went to work every day for 20 years going, holy crap, what's going to happen today?
Right.
You know, looking forward to it.
Right. And I think I always talk about with my clients finding their passion, because once you find your passion, then
focus is automatic.
It's automatic. But let me just bring up the mindfulness piece of this now for a minute. So when I had to walk the dog when Steve had surgery and then unfortunately got pneumonia, I was in charge of walking the dog 3 times a day, which meant I had to leave my office and I had to come back up here during the day to walk the dog. And I know there are a lot of people out there who can relate to this. So you get the dog outside and everything that's running through your head is about the future. Oh, my God, I'm walking the dog. I've got a client coming. I'm going to be late getting back down there. They're doing construction, going back down the hill. How am I going to get there on time? I was determined, and I started out this whole process, and I shared this with you privately, is that I was going to walk this dog in the moment, and I was going to enjoy that 10, 15, 20 minutes that I had outside with the dog, totally in the moment, enjoying him, enjoying the scenery, enjoying the people that I would run into, and it made me so peaceful. Because when the dog felt it too, I wasn't rushed, I wasn't pulling him,
mm-hmm.
Come on, Enzo, let's go, we got to get... I gave myself enough time. That's the most important piece. So I gave myself enough time in the morning, I gave myself enough time in the afternoon and at night, so I wasn't rushed. I could be in the moment when the thoughts would come up. I would just say, let it be, come back to the moment, was able to stay focused. And that actually helped with the rest of my focusing during the day.
Oh, yeah.
It's powerful.
It is. Found very much the same thing, almost doing the same thing with my own dog. Just taking that time, 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes at night, especially when I walk him. The mornings have gotten shorter because of the cold and because of just time constraints. But in the evening when I have that 20 minutes to just walk and be out, especially when it's a nice old, you chill in the air, you know, a little bite, which in California we get just a little bite.
A little bite.
to just let everything else go. And then when you step back in the house, when I'm there, the things that need to be done just kind of fall into place. So it's helpful.
Yeah, it's very peaceful too. Okay, let's move on to, now these I think we can do together. And this is forgetful and losing things, because it more or less runs along the same line when you talk about the negative symptoms. And I think a lot of us are forgetful. Now, let me just jump in here first. I use this example at group on Wednesday night in Torrance and also Thursday night. So when you go to the supermarket, you usually bring a list with you, right, so that you don't forget anything. Okay. So you write everything down. And what I was saying to the group members the other night is that I don't use a list anymore. And the reason being is I don't engage in my thoughts when I'm in the supermarket. For example, you ever walking through the supermarket and you see somebody with mounds of bad food in their basket?
I'm that guy.
That's you. Okay. And so years ago, I'd be like, oh, my God, can you believe that? And they have alcohol in there, too, and they're eating all this bad food, and they're drinking, and they're overweight, and they must be so unhealthy. And judgments, judgments, judgments. Okay. Now, I go to the supermarket. I'm in the moment. I see something like that. I say, oh, that's fascinating, and move on to the different aisles because I don't bring a list and I don't forget anything. I come home remembering everything.
Okay, so I hate you.
Okay, that's good. That's number one. Well, if you use the mindfulness, then you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't hate.
Okay.
But the judgments are a big part of this forgetful thing, too.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Because I'm still using a list, so maybe it's because I'm still a judgeful SOB.
Yes, you are.
I was early on one of the first people who used to use a PDA, a personal data assistant. The Palm, those old Palm devices were really critical for me for not forgetting things. And I, to this day, I'm still bitter that the Palm market died. I was a bitter holdout to the very end. And the reason for it is because Palm had the best reminders of any other data device out there. You could write little scribble notes, and you could put a reminder in there and have snoozes on it. And there were a number of – there were just features about it that I swear that, in retrospect, an ADD person designed it. I kid you not.
I'm sure.
Because it matched or meted my meted – it met my needs so perfectly that, like I said, when it finally went away, when it was just out of the market, and then the iPhone and these other things came up, I was bitter. You know, I was like, crap, now I'm having to conform to these other tools. And none of them have ever matched up to that. They never, none of them have the integrated functionality that Palm had. So it's a matter of just being flexible and moving on. But the forgetfulness thing, I'm still doing the list. I have a grocery list now that I keep in my phone, and it's on a task list, some app that I purchased that when I go in, I look at the list, I purchase what's on my list, and try and stick to that to keep from having that grocery cart full of things. So otherwise, you know, end up with just, what was it I was trying to buy? Well, in the meantime, my problem is I'm buying 14 other things. If I know exactly what I need to do, I'll go in there, do that, see maybe one or two items, go, that'd be nice, throw it in, and then I'm out of there.
Right.
So.
And there's nothing, and listen, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, I encourage people to use lists.
There are definitely times for it.
No, there really is, and it's very important. The other thing it's important for, too, is what you just said, Chris, is not spending too much money, because that's the other thing that we're not really good with is ADD people sometimes can just overspend their budget.
Impulsivity. Your grocery store is the absolute worst place for impulsivity.
Right.
So
Right. Arguably
that list would be one of those barriers to that impulsive behavior.
Right. And there are different apps out there, like you were just talking about tasks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That can be really helpful. So I would encourage everybody to research those and use whatever you need to use, but also use the mindfulness, use the meditation to help you to get to a better place while you're using these other things that are beneficial.
Right.
Losing things.
Okay, so, this is something that I think a lot of people, it's one of the things that in my mind people always talk about. So you meet somebody with ADD, and the first thing you talk about is, okay, what do you do with your keys, your wallet, and in your phone?
Right.
You know, but the reality is that I have, so I talked about having very little, you know, furniture where I live. I try and keep it down to the bare minimum. One of the things I have by the door is a caddy that I made in junior high school. My mom had it for the longest time. And when she got sick earlier this year, I went ahead and brought it into my house. And even though she's gone back home, I've kept it. And what I found is that caddy, it's got a spot for my keys, for my wallet, for my watch, you know, my three things. My phone I have to keep someplace else. It's got a docking station where it gets charged, but it's always in the in that place.
Right.
I will almost always keep the things that I need in that, those areas. And if I see, and this is the hardest, one of the hardest behaviors I had to learn, and there's no strategy for this. When I would see my keys sitting on the kitchen counter, I'd have to tell myself, grab those and put them where they, you know, they belong.
Right.
And it took me a long time to get to that point. But I'm now there. I put the keys away, and they're always where they go. Going back to the minimalist type things, the more things you have, the more things you have to lose, and more places to lose them in.
Right.
It's just that simple. It really is.
Right.
So with that said, there's a lot of little odds and ends that I have. Like I've got spare pairs of shoelaces for my work shoes, dress shoes, and the like. I've got Christmas cards and things like that. I have a small plastic caddy that I keep in the closet. Everything that that is small in nature fits in one of two places. It goes into that caddy, or it goes in a small caddy I have at my desk that keeps my. I've got a label printer, which is what those OCD, ADD people have, and I'm that guy. So I've got a label printer. No, the dog's not labeled, but all his cans are. No, I'm just kidding. I've got some other things in there, so I keep extra pens, paper clips, and things like that, but it's all there along with my hanging files. Everything that's, you know, in that category, those things that are small, I use, Yankee Candles. I just happen to be a fan of theirs. And they make those diffusers that go on top, the metal things that just promote better burning. When I'm not using it, it goes right back in the caddy so that I don't lose it. Otherwise, it'll be laying around somewhere and get tucked in a corner, shoved in a drawer,
right.
And then I can't find it.
Right.
The fortunate thing is were I to do that, there's so few things. I'm whittling down to the tools and the implements of life that really do add value. In some form or fashion or function, otherwise get rid of it.
Right. So here's the other thing about losing things. I think in our population, when we get stressed, our ADHD symptoms, negative symptoms, get worse.
Oh yeah.
And a big one for me, this is a big one, is when I get stressed, I do get forgetful because I am not in the moment. So I've had a couple of instances probably in the past couple of months where I've lost things, which I say, wait, how did I do that? And then I go back and I think I had something very stressful going on. So I walked out of my office one night, which I never do, and left my phone there. Got all the way home, realized I didn't have my phone, had to go back to the office. So paying attention to the stressors during the day, and then what I'm trying to do now is just get out of my head if I'm stressed at the end of the day and just look around the office and say, okay, what do I need to take with me home today for the next day that I need to work on or whatever it is, just very calmly in the moment so that you don't forget.
Another thing, like for work, there'll be things that I know, like, during the weekend, I'll remember that I have to do, oh, crap, when I get to work on Monday, I've got to do X. I will send myself an email at work. I have a work email address
Good idea.
And a home email address. So I'll send something to my Navy account address. And, you know, so when I show up to work Monday, I will have, you know, two or three emails from people who had nothing better to do over the weekend than task me with stuff. And then those couple of things, you know, that I may have thought about over the weekend, And then I can then, and this is what I like about Outlook, you can then take that email, drop it into a calendar reminder, and if it's a personal item, I can do it over the course of my lunch.
Right.
If it's something to do related to work, then I can, you know, schedule it in the calendar. That's another thing that I'll get into later, but another one of the strategies, but just another way of keeping from forgetting things.
From forgetting things,
the important things. If it's something, again, if it's a minor thing, let it go. But if it's something that really needs to be done, that it's...
I notice, use alarms
mm-hmm.
in your phone.
Right.
And that I encourage people to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's an app I have on my phone called Nudge.
Mm-hmm.
And what I use that for is personal things. So, like, it nudges me to remember to get milk on the way home, or nudges me to remember that I have to go get something personal for myself, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps nudging you until, you know, you set the time, and it nudges you up to that time.
Yeah,
so.
I'd end up yelling at the app,
yeah,
going,
I'll remember,
damn it.
Because you're not in the moment, but that's okay.
No, but one of the things that I use in my car, you know, with the milk, is I've got 3x5 cards, and this goes back to being resourceful. I have 3x5 cards that I keep in my truck. They sit in my visor when I'm not using them, and when I do need them, I'll put whatever cards that I need sitting in my little caddy in the middle of my truck. I keep my truck Spartan, like my house. There's really nothing in it that doesn't need to be there, so I don't have a bunch of garbage around. And when you see a 3x5 card that says groceries, it's the reminder, okay, I got to go.
Right.
Then I look at my phone, okay, I've got these three items I need to pick up. So it's a trigger. I found that with memory, the biggest thing, and it's probably the thing that gets us in trouble, is we forget. And because we forget, we keep everything in sight, so we have piles of stuff around. Well, those piles of stuff then create a situation, or at least for myself, where it just diffused me, or it would just take all the life out of me. My brain couldn't function within it. So get rid of the excess stuff, you know, like newspapers that were piling up, or I had magazines that I intended to read. You know, it's been a month now. I'm not going to read it. Off into recycle it goes. You know, being honest with myself about it. And if there was something I would need out of it, cut it out. And now I'm trying to get to the point where I'm scanning things now. I bought a scanner, a good one, and I can scan documents that I need and keep them, retain them for whatever purpose. I file them, and they're done. I don't have to remember them anymore. And then when I'm on a project later on, that's the trigger to go back and get them.
You know, that's a really good point. That scanner, there's something that they advertise on TV about bills and stuff that you can scan
mm-hmm.
into your computer, and it organizes them for you. Because I hear a lot of people tell me that they have piles and piles of clutter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is because, as I've talked about before, there's fear in those piles.
Right.
And so if you can kind of scan that stuff after you get the fear out, you get rid of the papers. You don't have the papers anymore.
Well,
you still have them. They're in your computer.
I had the fortune of being married to a bookkeeper for 23 years, and so I knew, or have a pretty good handle on, what are the documents I need to keep and what are the documents that I need to get rid of. During my military career, there were certain things that I retained until the end of my career, and they went away. I have a box, just a normal size box that has documents in it that were collected while I worked at the program office that I'll probably be buried with. You know, because if there's ever a congressional or anything like that where they're going back and doing a review of any of those programs that I worked on, I'll have them, and I have the hard copies. But everything else, if I don't need it, it goes away.
Right.
If I can scan it for something like the work that you and I do, that stuff that can easily be scanned, put in a computer, I don't need a hard copy of it, and
right.
It goes away. It's out of that fear.
Yes.
Know, those fear piles that you talk about that I think is spot on.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to move on to procrastination, which is everybody's favorite subject that has ADHD.
Okay, so going back to what I talked about earlier, you called it passion. Do what you like doing. If you give you an example, I took over committee chair of the Buildings and Grounds Committee at church last July, and I was just doing a crappy job at it. The truth was is that my heart wasn't in it, and I took the job over because I used to be an engineering officer, so I've got all these skills managing people, managing facilities and things like that. But the truth was is I didn't mind being a worker bee coming in one Saturday a month, putting in 3 hours, and then going home. But when I was now being responsible to do this, my heart wasn't in it. And eventually I submitted a letter of resignation to the board, and I resigned the position after having consulted with somebody who took over for me, and found that if I'm not going to do what I say I'm going to do, and I just could not seem to drive myself to doing it because I've done it for so long. It's not what I wanted to do anymore.
Right.
I pulled myself out of it, and now I've gotten, and I'm working in another area that really I am passionate about. So I spend a lot of time engaged in the work and contributing in a way that I would not have otherwise done in that other area.
Right.
So doing what speaks to me has been, and that's always been the case. Again, I got lucky in the Army that I went into something that I enjoyed. I thoroughly loved the fact that I went and traveled all the time. And the other thing is that, and we talked about this in one of your, actually not yours, but one of the folks at the group who is in the circus for a number of years, the job changed every so often. So I wasn't looking at the same faces in the same work environment on the same ship. Things changed every so often. So that was a huge part of renewing everything for me. But I still was getting a paycheck from the same place, doing essentially the same work, just in a different environment, different people.
So procrastination, I believe, is also very much related to fear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like for me, for example, I'm all excited about what we're working on. But when I have to go write something, I have tons of fear about writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always been a struggle for me, given my creative mindset, because all this stuff comes flooding in. And I know that I need to make bullet points and then kind of write it from the bullet points. But I see that writing for a lot of people with ADHD can be a real struggle, and it's related to the fear of, is this going to be okay? Am I going to write this and it's going to sound okay, or am I going to make mistakes? Is it going to be perfect? Is it not going to be perfect? So just a little story about procrastination. This past weekend, both my boys live together. My younger son he's a senior in college, and he and his brother were going to go to a concert on Friday night, which Chris, who's my older son, was pretty excited about. Saturday morning, I called Mike, who's my younger son, and said, how was the concert? He said, we didn't go. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, we didn't go. And I had already gotten the tickets, but he said, I realized that I really needed to work on this project that I've got. And it's not due Monday. It's due a week from Monday, but I really had to keep working on it. So later on that day, I spoke to my older son, and he and I are more alike than Mike and I. And he said, yay, you got to give him a lot of credit for that. I mean, he said, that wouldn't have been me. I said, me neither. I'd have been like, okay, where's the party? Where's the concert? I'm running. But see, that's his passion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he's able to say, okay, I can put aside this concert. You know, if I get a chance, I'll hear whoever it was. I have no idea who they were seeing. I'll hear these people again, or I can listen to them on CD or whatever. But he was able to step away and say, no, I got to get this done. And that's what you were just talking about. When it's your passion, then usually we can break through. But what I do, and this is related to mindfulness as well, is when I have to study for my license exam, or I have to start writing for something that we're working on, I'll stand up if I feel my mind starting to talk to me. You don't have to do this now. You can do this later on. I'll stand up and just say, no, I'm not going to engage in these thoughts. I'm just going to notice them. I'm going to take a walk, whether it's a walk around the block or a walk in here, and come and sit back down and start working. And that's what I tell people a lot when they talk about how do I break this procrastination chain that continues. You got to break that place that you're in. You got to do something to break the situation because your mind is talking to you at that moment and saying, you don't have to do this now. No, I do. So you've got to get into that place of, I'm in the moment. I'm going to focus on this right this moment.
One of the things that I found that I tended to do was to look at something and go, well, this is going to take 4 hours to accomplish, and I only have 30 minutes.
Right.
And for that reason, I would talk myself out of it. I'll do it this weekend when I have the 4 hours to do it. I won't have to start and stop and end up taking 4.5 or 5 hours otherwise. But then something happens on Friday night, and I'm now, you know, heading to my mom's or something on Saturday because, you know, some family emergency. And as a result of that, the item that would have gotten half done over the course of the week has now been now put off until Monday, where I've got to try and figure out how to get it done in just a very limited amount of time. So spending a little bit of time, and there's an app out, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's you can use any phone app, you know, just a timer for 30 minutes. Set 30 minutes aside to do just a little chunk of anything.
So,
and even if it's just finding everything you need,
right?
You would have had to have done that Saturday anyway,
right.
Or I would have.
Right.
So that part is now done. It's all sitting on my desktop on my computer, or shortcuts are. And the next time I come back to it, I can then take the next step.
Right. So one of the things that Chris and I were talking about before the show is a disability, and this is a disability that a learning disability that's related to ADHD is called sequencing. So what I tell people all the time is what we do is go, I'm going to go A to Z, and then I'm going to figure out how to get back to B, C, and D. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So sequencing is the ability to be linear, to do things in steps. Do this first, I'm going to do this second, I'm going to do this third. It scares us, especially when it's a big project.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a writing project or it's a project that we have to do that our wives or husbands have been nagging us to get done and we haven't been doing. So my suggestion to people I work with is don't look at the task. Don't look at the whole task. Break it down into doable little pieces. And as Chris just said, time it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give yourself 30 to 60 minutes, what you're doing is you're actually initiating that internal motivation that happens automatically when we procrastinate. Because when we wait to the last minute to do something, we go, holy shit, I got to get this done. And then we get into that mode of typing fast or studying or whatever it is we've held off. If you set a timer and you give yourself that period, that specific period of time after you've broken the project down,
mm-hmm.
because sequencing is an issue, we are establishing that internal motivation that's going to get it done. And it's a little piece. It's not a big project. That's for when you have the big things that have to get done.
I think one of the areas in this population, myself included, is after having spent a lifetime of being beaten down, the normal behavior of doing something, then being rewarded for it, gets reversed with us. So in my case, I come home, I sit down, I watch 4 hours worth of House of Cards, playing catch up on the series, and then realize, oh crap, I haven't done my laundry. I've got, you know, no drawers for tomorrow, and I'm going to be, you know, sitting up doing the laundry, you know, another 2 hours until that gets taken care of. Putting that behavior back into place of doing what needs to be done and then rewarding yourself for having done it. Well, crap, instead of 4 hours, I only get to watch it for two, but I don't have to stress about it now and go to bed late because I wasn't doing what I needed to do.
Right.
And another thing that I found extremely helpful, though it is really hard because it's a pride issue, is going to somebody and say, I need help. It is the hardest thing in the world to do.
For everybody in this population is what I noticed.
But
yeah.
I'll give you an example of something that I wouldn't have done 10 years ago. I went on leave for an extended period of time, and I came back to an inbox. It was literally packed. It was just, I had hundreds of emails in there, and it was debilitating. So I went to a friend and said, who I knew was very good at managing information like that, and she had a good handle on what my responsibilities were and things. She literally went into my inbox and gutted out the garbage, took and prioritized things for me and said, you know, here's the things you got to address like right now today. Here are the things you got to get this week. And here are the things that when you get around to it, get around to it. And by doing that, you know, it enabled me to overcome that. She spent like an hour doing it. But by the time I came back, I would have spent an hour getting through, you know, I would have gone through linear, one email to the next. And she had her own method of doing things. She happens to be ADD as well. But she has her own way of her own set of skills and being able to handle stuff like that. And, okay, great. So being able to, you know, just swallow the pride and say, I can't do this. Can you help me? I think is probably one of the best things that I can do for any situation.
And I think that when you talk about swallowing the pride, it's about the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it as well with younger kids, like even adolescents, you know, that are in first or second or third year of high school. I have one kid in particular who, he's adorable. I love him. He has such a hard time going to his teachers when he has missing assignments and saying, you know, I need help with this. So this is what he and I are working on. And he's really starting to overcome it because mm-hmm. he's beginning to see that it's beneficial to him. But he does have this ego where it's talking to him mm-hmm. and saying, you know, you're not stupid. You don't need that help. It's got nothing to do with being stupid. Your friend who had ADD, she has another way of doing things that you didn't at the time.
Right.
So she was able to help you see this is the way, the best way to prioritize what it is you need to get done when you've got this inbox that's piling up.
Well, my new strategy now is I've got a BlackBerry, so when I'm on travel or something for a week, I can delete emails on the fly as garbage comes in or things that need to be taken care of.
Which is great.
You know, and I hadn't thought about this, but television, and so this is my own personal thought. Television gives us all kinds of bad information. It tells us that everybody else in the world is pretty smart mm-hmm. and fun to be around. So we try and live up to that standard. And I've gotten rid of, as I've shared with you, I've gotten rid of my television, and I watch, geez, I'd say within the last month, I've watched maybe two or three hours worth, half of which was probably news. Otherwise, the only other thing that I do is I have Netflix, and I watch right now
House of Cards.
Yeah,
which
I'm
is
in
great.
The final three episodes, so it's killing me. Don't say anything.
I won't.
By not listening to that, I'm not being held up to that standard anymore, and I don't know how much of an impact that has because it's been a number of years since I've been an average TV watcher, and I used to be, geez, in my early 30s, I would watch hours a night. So I kind
of... Good exit, right?
It's an exit, and I think it's another way of just completely minimizing ourselves.
Yeah.
So,
No, I agree, but it is a vegging device
mm-hmm.
when you need to veg after a long day. Okay, here comes the big one. So the ability to regulate emotion. This is an executive function deficit on steroids for all of us.
So I stand corrected. This was something that really did not happen until I met you, and I really didn't even recognize that I wasn't regulating my emotions. So, this one's one of those, you know, embarrassing areas because I remember it. I can remember one episode in particular in which I wanted to purchase a particular thing from my wood shop, and it wasn't terribly expensive, but at the time we couldn't afford it. And I remember my wife just putting her foot down and saying, "No, we're not going to buy it." And I remember having a temper tantrum, you know, and I look back on it now and I hang my head low. But at the same time, I own it. I own that behavior. I'm talking about it. It's now going to be on the internet forever and ever and ever. That's okay because I'm working past that.
Right.
that person who had that temper tantrum was somebody who was in a tremendous amount of pain, who was really coping with a life in a way that was unhealthy. So, but it's mine, and I'm trying to divorce myself from that. So
when you talk about temper tantrums, right? So the first thing that comes to my mind is kids throw temper tantrums,
mm-hmm.
especially two-year-olds that are trying to individuate
right.
and to get their own way. And we as adults, and I hear a lot of adults tell me about temper tantrums if they can't, you know, have something that they want or
mm-hmm.
somebody says something to them that they don't like, so they immediately take that person's head off because,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what they're used to doing. So what comes into play here for me is years and years of behavior like that because, you know, coming from New York and then being an Italian and all those different things, I was not regulated and
mm-hmm.
would go off. I could go off in a second. And what I recognized is how that was destroying relationships that I had with people, my own children, you know, hurting them dramatically because they would talk about my intense tone. Me, I have an intense tone. And it never, you know, self-awareness
mm-hmm. right.
is a big one in getting better with this. But I think the biggest thing for me in regulating my emotions was being able to be in the moment and really just focusing on, okay, let me listen closely to what this person is saying to me and let me process that. Let me pause for a second before I respond. Let me think about what I'm going to say back to them so I'm not hurting them. And we're going to have a productive conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think slowing down, that's the pause button, is the biggest thing. So just to throw in medication for a minute, because we haven't touched upon medication. Medication, for those of you who are listening that are able to take medication in the beginning of this whole process so that you grab the tools that you need in order to get better, I know that you're starting to wean down. I'm off my medication now.
Just a quick update. I was on 40 twice a day. I've gone down to 30 twice a day. So I've started the process of going down. I'm going to hit 20 and then...
Excellent.
Yeah.
See, and that's what the mindfulness and meditation has been doing, because when you're slowing down the neuroplasticity, you know, neuroplasticity, changing the brain function, the patterns of the brain, that's what neuroplasticity is. It happens with new experiences, okay? So if you experience your world in a slower, more peaceful way than you had in the past, your brain is going to start saying, oh, this is interesting. I'm not used to this because I was always running on, you know, high-speed, high-tech oil all day long and going crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Now your brain's beginning to slow down and be able to regulate emotion, be able to stop the impulsivity. You're not procrastinating as much. You're able to focus more. That's given with mindfulness and meditation. So things are changing. So your medication gets reduced because you're able to function better at a lower stimulant milligram because you're utilizing the mindfulness and the meditation in a better way.
In my own case, stepping back from that, getting to that point where I could step back, was something else you talk about is self-care. So I don't remember how much I've talked about this, at least on the show, but you and I have talked about it extensively. I spent, at the end of my divorce, or rather during the course of my divorce, and through just the past years, have spent a lot of time in the woods. I'm an introvert. I can only spend so much time with people, and then I've got to get away and just recharge. So that was, for me, was paramount to being able to stop, was just enabling myself to be in a place where I didn't feel threatened. I can sit in the woods and see all those things, but for me it is the place that I unwind like no other. So that was probably the precursor to that being able to stop and to think and to be able to think about what it is that's happening at the moment and to be aware that the emotions coming up are things from the past as opposed to a real threat or an issue right now,
mm-hmm.
and that, okay, I need to let go of this. And I find that, because I used to spend like one almost a weekend a month sitting out in the woods, is that I go out there very rarely anymore. I go hiking on occasion with friends, but it's no longer going out by myself for an extended period to really retreat. I don't feel a need to retreat anymore. I can care for myself in so many other ways. But ultimately, it goes back to what I'd said earlier about the temper tantrum. I own it. I own today. I own tomorrow. So what I say, what I do, I now feel empowered to have a choice in my own life and the outcome of that life. And if I want to have a temper tantrum, I get all the benefits of what comes with it, or I don't.
Right.
And I choose not to. So, yeah, that's...
And self-care, you know, is something that I think a lot of us get guilty about because we remember, gee, I didn't get this done today, so do I really deserve to do something that would be fun? And, you know, I'm here to tell everybody that you really need to have that time to relax, to do what you want to do. You know, we happen to live in one of the most amazing places when it comes to scenery. You know, the California coastline is amazing. I live up in Palos Verdes, so I can get in my car and drive to the ocean in 2 minutes. And it's just kind of a peaceful time. But people all over the country have beautiful scenery and can just get out for an hour and just kind of enjoy the day and appreciate what they're looking at. And it's a way of really meditating and doing something fun for themselves.
Right. But it's also a matter of understanding the behavior. Because while you say go out and do something fun, there are things that can be done that are unhealthy,
uh-huh.
that are behaviors that lead to more problems, vice,
like
really
drinking.
Being in a place of rest and solitude. So for me, being alone, being in the woods, that is the place
right.
that I can just let go
right.
and relax. And for other people, it may be for the extrovert, obviously, it's going to be sitting in the middle of a mall or something somewhere with a bunch of people around, engaging in different things, going to a museum and talking to people, but maybe that's it. Maybe it's just taking the afternoon for 2 hours and drive out to a local museum. We have the Getty here, which is awesome.
Yep.
And spend a little bit of time, you know, being there, being around all the people. Whatever is an individual is that care. Not really doing something fun from that context, but that's nurturing.
It's
nurturing. Would be the better word.
Yeah, and I also think that people who are listening need to understand that I believe that addiction begins with ADD, the word addiction, and so we have to be really careful because we have depleted dopamine levels, and so
yeah.
we have to worry about the partying, the drinking, the marijuana use, the other things that are big, you know, eating too much, you know, too much sugar, and that is something we're hopefully going to get to because you mentioned exercise, and I also wrote down food, but we'll get there. But no, nurturing yourself, I think, is something that's really, really big. Yeah. So, okay, let's keep going on. So the next one on here is scattered, and to me that's more along the same lines of focused,
right?
Not being focused.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get to unorganized, because there's many people that complain that they just can't get organized. And like myself, I told you years ago, I'd go to Staples and buy all these different things to get organized, and they'd sit in the closet because I wasn't doing the work from the inside out like I've done now, and now I'm an organized individual. Is it perfect? No. There's no such thing as perfect to me. Okay. Maybe to you there is, but to me there isn't. Because
you work towards it.
Yeah, I just think that's not living in the Tao, which is the middle.
Right. Okay.
That's an extreme. But, yeah, every day I work towards being more and more organized. But I know where things are for the most part. I can pinpoint exactly where I put something. And
You mentioned the Tao, and I was thinking to myself, before you mentioned that, I'm thinking, I don't know if I should say this or not, but one of the things that I've learned through going to church and being exposed to all the different religions within Buddhism, it's like, I'm probably going to botch the perception, but it's looked at, want is looked at as evil, you know, and that's probably not correct, but that's how I view it. That want of things is what is so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have all of this stuff. I want to get this magazine and get the newspaper and get all of these things. And I've had an on again, off again hate relationship with the newspaper. I would get it and then shut it off and then get it and shut it off. I like having the ability to read it, but what I find is that when I do have it, I'm not reading it. So, and then it piles up, and then that creates a problem.
Right.
Controlling the want of things. There are a lot of things that I want. I have a wood shop full of equipment. I wanted it, but I'm not using it now, and it's just collecting dust and would be better off in somebody else's hands. So it's going to go away, and drilling down to, you know, with the furniture, that's an easy thing. I got to have some place to sleep. I've got to have some place to put my computer and work in an area apart from that where I can just sit down and relax with my dog, and which is where I actually watch Netflix, too. I move my computer over there and just watch TV or computer-like TV. But in other areas of our life, you know, do we want a relationship? Do we want a relationship that's going to be very time-consuming and those kinds of things? Well, when we want all these things and we pack our lives, then you can't control anything. It's just all over the map.
Exactly. And I also think there's another thing, too. You know, I talk to people a lot about piles of stuff that are around the house, and they just keep adding to the pile. So let's say you're able to get through that pile.
Mm-hmm.
You bring the fear into me, and we work on the fear folder and whatever. For those of you who are listening, if you've got piles, pull the stuff out of the piles that give you fear. Put them in a folder marked fear. Put that on the side. Get rid of the other stuff. File it, you know, shred it, whatever you need to do. But here's the biggest piece, maintenance. And this is something that I find a lot of people have a hard time where organization is concerned. They'll get their place all organized or their desk, and it keeps happening over and over and over again. That's where I have found that mindfulness helps me tremendously, because when I go to put something down, I think, okay, should I put this on the desk or can I file this? Can I put this away? Because my mantra is, I like to touch paper one time, especially bills that come in
mm-hmm.
to the house, instead of touching them three or four times, moving
right.
them around.
Right.
Okay. And that's the whole idea of maintenance, is we all need to get these little mantras that we say to ourselves.
That touching something one time, I heard that years ago in some other context. But I started employing that years ago in my life, and things like laundry. So you pull laundry, and I've got a laundry out in the garage. I would pull it in, leave it in the living room where it would sit, and then have stuff upstairs, and it would just be all over the map. When I was ready to move, it would go straight upstairs and into my drawers. No ifs, ands, or buts. It you touch it once.
Right.
And that has been key in keeping things
right.
moving. And that maintenance part that you talked about is key. Because if you falter, just remind yourself, everybody falls every once and again. Pick it back up. Get it cleaned up. Throw this pile out, you know, except for the things that are required. And move on, but keep moving. And if you find yourself with it in your hands three times in a week, it's not working.
So here's another place that people get unorganized, and that's the computer. So I actually have a woman who's on my Wednesday group, and since she's been coming, and it has not been a long time, she has cleaned out 42,000 emails. out of her inbox. Because I talked about that one night and told everybody how my inbox basically is clean. Because I go through it every day. I file things in folders, you know, in Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
I have folders that I go into, and periodically I'll go in and clean out the folders if I don't need them anymore. So I'm not overwhelmed. When I open my computer, I'm not overwhelmed. I can see things that are new, decide, I don't even need to look at this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is junk mail. It's just going. It's going into the trash. She actually accomplished that, and she's one of the amazing people we have in the group who's doing the work. That's doing the work. And so she also has stopped feeling overwhelmed. That's a big part of being unorganized, that feeling of overwhelmed. So we shut down. This is when people use the word lazy, and there is no such thing as lazy. There's overwhelmed. We shut down, and then we can't move on. That's what happens, that overwhelmed feeling.
Right. This story reminded me of the one that I just recounted a little while ago. I'm looking at an email box. It's just full of stuff. And I think it touches upon an issue that, or the underlying key here, which is whatever it is that I can't do, there is somebody else around who can.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they have trouble in some other area, something in their life that they need assistance with that you're really good at. You know, it's kind of one of those situations where you can help one another, or maybe you can't, but you, still being able to help somebody from time to time, pay it forward.
Yeah.
Because it always comes back.
Absolutely. And one of the things I love about the groups, and, you know, you are a member of both now, really, and, you know, Steve always says, my husband, who's the producer of this show, always says he loves when, you know, a new member will come in and will start to talk about their problems, their challenges, their issues, and everybody in the group has an idea of how to help them, because
mm-hmm.
we're also creative, and we're also willing to jump in and to help others with ideas that, you know, worked for us, and maybe it'll work for you. It doesn't necessarily always work that way, but for the most part.
Well, like I said, in the be resourceful part, you've got friends that are ADD, tap into them.
Exactly.
Because they're a great resource.
Yeah. So short-term memory issues, okay. I laugh because my front of my brochure are keys in the refrigerator, because years ago I would walk around for 2 hours looking for my keys and they were in the refrigerator. What were they doing in the refrigerator? I can't tell you what they were doing. Why they ended up there, I have no idea. How many times did I leave my keys in the door and lock the door from the inside?
Mm-hmm.
And my keys, and I'm worried about people breaking in the house, and my keys are in the door, you know? I mean, short-term memory.
Yeah.
Where is this? Or, you know, what's that person's name? And, oh, my God, how could I have forgotten that person's name? And I just met them yesterday. So we all seem to struggle a little bit in this area. And what I have found is that when I'm mindful now, when I meet somebody and I repeat their name
mm-hmm.
in saying hello to them, and I remember that moment, in the moment, being aware, I can remember the name. My keys don't end up in the refrigerator anymore.
One of the biggest things for me has been writing things down. So, for example, goals. When you're looking forward into, and I understand we're talking short term, but when you're looking forward, let's say for 2 or 3 years, it's all kind of fuzzy until you write it down, and then it becomes real. And then when you start working towards those goals, it begins to manifest little by little. I've been journaling now for, and initially when I started in 2005, I believe that's the date of my first binder, I was in the Army. I was, it was just a way of documenting everything because I was being bombarded with information and I couldn't keep it all straight. But over the course of time, and especially since I met you, my entries have become more deliberate, and I talk or write a great deal about how I feel. But for me, writing things down has been key. So I can go back for a week, and I have a habit of when I have something I have to do, I'll write a block to the left of it, indicating a task. So I can go back and look at it. And I've got a couple of other key things that are triggers for me. I'll do three little stars next to a critical point that I know I will need to come back to at some point. So when I'm thumbing through the pages, there it is.
So how do you – okay, so here's something. I get the writing, but, like, how do you remember to go back to that item that you put three stars in?
Set time aside on Friday. So going back to Outlook, on Friday I've got two or three hours set aside. I have 2 hours set aside or 3 hours set aside, but I generally crunch it down to two. And that's my time to go back and go, okay, what are the things that I was supposed to have accomplished this week? Did I get everything done? And, oh, crap, I didn't do this. So it'll give me a little bit of time to finish it out or make a couple of phone calls real quick before I'm on my way home.
Okay.
And if I don't do it, it's the time in which I write it, or not write it down, but I will document it in Outlook, put it as a calendar item. So now it's on the calendar, and it'll be there next week when I come back. I used to have Outlook at home, and it was on my computer at the time, and having it with my phone and everything else was great. But for whatever reason, when I changed computers, it didn't follow, and now I've got to get another copy. And, it's, you know, it's a software is so expensive. So
here's something that we've been talking a lot about in group, and that's forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
okay? And forgiveness for ourselves, first and foremost, along with compassion. Right. So the reason I brought this up is we're going to make mistakes. When we're trying to get better, we're going to slip up. Okay.
Right.
It may be that something that I write down, I may not look at, and then I forget that
mm-hmm.
I said I was going to do that. Well, instead of beating ourselves up, which is something most of us like to do, those thoughts come up in our head, look, you screwed up again.
Mm-hmm.
You do this all the time. When are you ever going to stop doing this? Whatever the thoughts are, the negative thoughts that come up. If you can stop, take that moment and pause. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
So stop, right? Stop, take a breath, observe your thoughts and proceed. If you can do that, then what's happening is you're able to forgive yourself and give yourself compassion.
One of the things that I used to do when I worked at the program office, 2005-06 time frame, and this was kind of a playing with the journal thing, I would write all of my tasks down on a single sheet of paper on a notepad. And on the pages behind, I would write down the events of the day and everything else. And at the end of the week, I would rip the pages out and, you know, make sure I got everything done, put it in a notebook. But there was one list, only one list. And so at work, at least, if I had something to do, I knew it was going to be on that list. And because there was only so much room on that notebook paper, it really forced me to be careful about what I was writing down there. I wouldn't write down petty things because I go, wow, you know, I'm writing this down and I'm going to, you know, this thing's going to get overwhelming. So I would kind of force me in a way to monitor what I was writing down.
But what about forgiveness? Can you do that? Do you work on forgiving yourself if you, because look, I know you're Superman, but reality is there's got to be some things that you say, I'm going to get done, even if it's at home,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't happen. Can you forgive yourself? Can you give yourself compassion? Are you good at doing that?
So one of the things I was going to close out with is that And I'll answer your question, is that no matter what you do, whatever strategies you come up with, whatever cute little devices that are out there that are there, if you don't own your future, it doesn't matter what you do. Nothing's going to fix it. That was probably the thing that changed for me, that when I started saying that, well, I didn't get things done and, you know, I would, you know, put the work before the reward. When I was making those strides, when I was even little bitty ones, and it's really key, is I was doing things a certain way for 40 years, and I was gradually changing my behavior. And as it changed, I was able to – to have self-compassion when I faltered, and I faltered all the time, and I still falter all the time. For all the things that I'm organized with, there are still things that I don't do well. So but I own all of that. It's mine. And because I know I'm trying, it's not that I'm kicking myself going, wow, you're a piece of crap.
Right.
You know, you're not doing this. No, I have made strides in so many areas. I am little bit at a time, but going back to, like I said, taking time to go out into the woods when I needed to just be there, that all comes together for saying that, yeah, I'm gonna take care of myself, and part of that taking care of myself is having some forgiveness from time to time.
Oh, you have to, because it's a powerful vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And forgiveness for others as well, which a lot of people struggle with, because it's like, well, I was hurt. Okay, I understand that. But I think everybody has responsibility in that process of getting hurt.
Right.
And so there has to, because I know so many people who have gotten sick over the years because of that anger and that resentment that they hold on to.
Yeah.
And so just being able to let it go, and as they say in AA, and let God, you know, or letting it go and forgiving that person,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, I forgive you to the best of my ability. Forgiveness and forgetting are two different things. But in the world of Buddhism and mindfulness and all that, you know, the Buddhists talk about loving their enemies, which
mm-hmm.
is huge. And you know that because you go to meditation with Buddhists. So
cool.
You understand that.
Well, let's touch upon Byron Katie for just a second and turning it back inward about forgiveness.
Yep.
One of the things that I believe is, I've heard forever and ever, you can't love somebody else until you love yourself
Absolutely.
First. How can you forgive somebody else if you're not going to forgive yourself
right.
for the things, or have compassion for somebody
right.
when you treat yourself like crap?
Exactly.
So if those behaviors aren't starting at home, and by home I mean within the very soul that needs it the most, then there's no way it can be projected effectively onto other people and shared and experienced. So if somebody says, yeah, I can forgive somebody else for something, but they turn around and they're beating themselves up, I really have to question whether or not they're really forgiving the other individual, or if they're just trying to blow past it.
You know, and the other piece of this, it's a compassion exercise that we've done at group, and I don't think you were there, is it's kind of like, okay, so they give you a scenario of, you know, you made a mistake at work and it was a serious mistake, and so what would you say to yourself? And, you know, everybody is saying, oh, you did it again, you made a mistake, you're not good, all this. What would you say to a friend who came to you and said, you know what happened today? I made a big mistake at work, I don't know what to do. Everybody in that room came back with, I'm so sorry, what can I do to help you? This isn't your fault completely. There must have been other things that happened that went on as well. It isn't the worst thing in the world. All these kind, compassionate scenarios for other people.
Right.
But for ourselves, we
tend to get... but the boot.
Right. Right.
It's so unfortunate, but it's right. And
so that practice is powerful.
And turning it inwards.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's a powerful thing to do, to be able to use that exercise. And when something happens, if we leave our keys in the refrigerator or we're late to something that we're supposed to be on time to, forgiving ourselves, you know, something came up, learning from that mistake,
mm-hmm.
and being kind and gentle to ourselves, because that really helps with the stress in our lives as well.
Right.
Yeah, so we're done. We have 60 seconds left. Is there anything else you want to add before we sign off? And I really want to thank you for being here, because every show we do together is great.
I just thank you for the invite. I always enjoy coming up here and spending time with you and Steve. I appreciate it.
That's great. Thank you for being on. For everybody who's listening today, and for those of you who will be listening through the next weeks, I want to thank everyone. I think this was a lot of great information. I thank Chris again for being here with me to do the show. Again, just want to remind everybody about the groups. Torrance, Wednesday night, 7:30 to 9, 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. And the other group is in Culver City, 6666 Green Valley Circle, and that's Thursday night from 6 to 7:30. So we're going to be back next week. We're going to have Gail on the show. That's going to be a great show. Gail is an amazing person. She's a coach. She's also extremely creative, and she's going to talk about herself and ADHD. So I'm going to say goodbye. Have a wonderful Sunday night, and everybody remember, please, to stay in the moment.